It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
What do you plan to do after the All-Star game to get better?
Buy you a new jacket.
Sits poised at the ready, sipping his Haterade.
Wait a minute. Just the cup says Haterade. That doesn't necessarily mean there's Haterade in it. It's water. It just happens to go into the fountain of Haterade that is yours truly. Hi there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey. That's M-S-O-C-E-Y. At WFYI.org, also on Facebook, also on the Twitter, at Matthew Soze. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog. Hopefully next week will be the debut of WFYI Staff Picks, so we sound like half-price books. And you can check out our blog at...
FilmSociology.tumblr.com.
Man who is still surviving Benihana's, that's Kobe Slagle. What? You took the Twilight correspondent. That would be First Sweet Bianca. It was her birthday.
Who is in the process of being reassigned here at Film Social.
Oh, she can't be the Twilight now that the saga's over? She'll find some other terrible chick lit to read and want to watch. Maybe it's written from the 70s.
Hey, maybe. I doubt it, though.
Because they're dirty and they don't wash.
Yep.
Anyway, happy birthday, First Sweet Bianca. But that's Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
And hanging out with me is a couple of gentlemen. Every now and then we like to just mix it up. And you two have not met, right, prior to this afternoon? Am I right?
We have not, yeah.
So we have Craig Mintz, which is who we call IMAX Guru here in Indianapolis. You can check out his work and his theater downtown. Always worth checking out. And Steve Cook, who's been on the show before. But you've both been on the show before, but it's been a while.
Yeah, thank you.
Not long enough. Good to have you here. So we will get to apparently some movie news happened this week, but we will get to that in a little bit because I will say it was fun not being online when the nominations came out. I remember I posted fill in the blank was robbed, and then I went and had lunch and breakfast and shopping, so that was all right. But I do want to talk about one of the films that is finally opening in Indianapolis, especially because it was all over the news Thursday with the Academy Award nominations. Zero Dark Thirty. Yes, the Kill Bin Laden film, directed by Catherine Bigelow, starring everyone's favorite everyone's favorite person to have you get tortured by, that's Jessica Chastain. Now, for once, this is actually based on a true story, inspired by a true story. Every other film is now based or inspired by a true story. I don't care anymore. This one, yeah, you do care a little bit. So, well, this is what I guess we shouldn't ruin the ending for anybody about this one, but yeah, it's kind of like even more than Apollo 13 or some other things. The thing about this picture, and it's funny, I got to see this. I was telling these guys I saw it at a press screening weeks ago, and you know the sign of a good film is that even though it's been weeks after the fact, you're still talking about it, you're still thinking about it, and yes, it's also been in the news because you know there's been question on whether the United States government has ever used torture tactics. In other news, the sun rises and sets. That being said, watching this picture, and of course, you know, the trailers are supposed to get you excited and get you enticed. And I'm not saying that the trailer for Zero Dark Thirty is a little misleading, but I will warn folks that this is a procedural film. This is a film that I like to put in the same category as All the President's Men and the underappreciated David Fincher film Zodiac.
Are you saying it's a potboiler?
I could be saying it's a... Yeah, actually, I am saying it's a potboiler. Jerk. what I'm saying is it is not a Jerry Bruckheimer, Don Simpson, flag-waving Michael Bay rah-rah picture.
That's a very good thing.
Jessica Chastain plays the woman, basically the new agent. As you see her at the beginning of the film, she is new to this job, but she is not plucky. She is not spunky. She is not, you know, idealistic. She's not Sandy Dennison up the down staircase or any. I know I'm using teacher comparisons, or, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer in Dangerous Minds, of, you know, really, really hoping to make a difference and then just getting beat down on with bureaucratic red tape, which kind of happens in this picture. Her character, this becomes her one and only task. And what's really helpful is that some of the people she comes across from and dealing with, including Mark Strong, who Chris Lloyd of the Film App has always, I think he's made the point, if Mark Strong is in your film, he's your villain.
Yeah.
And he's not in this one. He is, but it's not also the pencil-pushing, shoulder-shrugging bureaucrat as well. This is a film that I'm also rewarding for what it is not, because we've seen these characters, we've seen these storylines thousands of times, and the fact that it's not this, and it's if you want some action, you do get it in the last 40 minutes or so with the kid from Warrior and the one who's the dad of Timothy Green, but you do get your night vision shoot 'em up and well done. The ending of the film, well, I'm not giving away a lot because we already talked about and we know what happens, but there is a little reminiscent of The Hurt Locker or even The Graduate. And if you know those films, you know what I'm talking about. It's what happens when you're – and it's funny. That's another thing we don't see in cop or action films is what happens when the task is done. And it gives a really nice button to this. Jessica Chastain's been one of the busiest actresses in the last few years. She got nominated for The Help and was in every other film last year with pictures like The Debt and Coriolanus. And, you know, she was married to Michael Shannon, which is always inspirational, in Take Shelter and Tree
Zod
of Life.
Michael,
what?
Is that the future Zod, Michael Shannon?
It is the future Zod, Michael Shannon. Take Shelter was just an underappreciated film. And, hey, any film where Michael Shannon's married to Jessica Chastain, that's a good thing. But so she's really been working in this. And it's a very intense role, very understated at the same time. And, you know, she got a nomination for good reason. So really, really enjoyed this film. It's well worth the buzz, well worth the accolades that's received so far. You got Sir Ben with my reaction.
Yes, 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 yes.
Now, Craig, you've also seen this?
I have not, actually.
Okay, you have not. I'm sorry. I know
it's
I've
one not. Of the few I have not seen.
Okay, so, well, it's there. So yeah. You can go check that out.
It's my weekend plan right there.
Very good. So, but that is also, that has opened up. And is that it? No, that's not it. Holy Motors opened as well in theaters. And, Haunted House, not screened for press.
And Gangster Squad.
Oh, yeah, Gangster Squad, yes. Or also known as the reason why Emma Stone was at the Oscar presentation yesterday so she could promote Gangster Squad.
Early reviews, not so good?
Onion didn't like it.
Yeah.
Great cast.
Yeah.
But they've said we've seen it before. Yeah. We've seen it done before and done better. Where the hell are you going? Kobe's stepping out for a little bit. We talk about shop on the air. Oh, okay. Isn't that nice? So, any great. You know what, Cove? Let's skip the break. Let's keep going. We'll talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray, and then we'll get into big Oscar chatting. The last few weeks, especially with talking about things that I'm still thinking about weeks after the fact, Kobe's Grateful Dead Europe 72, also known as the highlight reel. We had a 48-minute highlight reel, ladies and gentlemen, and we thank Kobe Slagle for all of his due diligence in making that happen. But that being said,
but we're still catching up.
We're still catching up on the time we could have used on that. But no. But along the way, we came up with some sound clips that we like to use, and hopefully use them in everyday life. I guess I'm not going to ask for an example, but No, I'm not. However, we did find something that, and I can't believe I'm using this as the top film to discuss on the DVD and Blu-ray pile. But I actually saw the film Dread.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, a couple things. First off, I remember writing on Facebook, just be better than the Sly version from the mid-90s.
Yeah, kind not of a low bar.
Right. Yeah, not saying much.
Yeah, not saying much. And it is. And bad timing for this picture. It came out months after The Avengers and Dark Knight. I would have been interested to see if it had come out before, if they put it out in the spring or even in the dead of winter last year. I don't know when it got completed. It also did have that looks like it's been on the shelf feel for a while. By the way, the Onion also has their winter movie preview. I think they said the most horrible time of the year. And they're talking about the number of films that have been on the shelf and delayed. And like Gangster Squad was supposed to have come out last year. And they're finally getting around to it. But Dread, you have a similar story. You have Carl Urban, who gets a starring role, and good for him. He's got time to kill between Star Trek gigs.
Yeah. Although he has to wear a mask the whole time.
He does have to wear a mask, but he's kind of doing what I think a lot of actors and audience members wish they could do, and that's imitate Clint Eastwood. remember how well Kurt Russell imitated Clint Eastwood in films like Escape from New York and most of the time in Tombstone? I think everybody just wants to be the silent, stoic badass, and he gets to do this at times. And even though he's got the giant mask and all you see is his stubbled lower face, or it looks like the microphone cam in the last Neil Young concert documentary, he made me chuckle, and because he just had the right tone of, yeah, I know I'm making this kind of movie. And that's kind of half the battle. This was apparently a British South African production, and it's in the, was it Cursed Earth and Mega City 1, which looks like South Africa. Yeah, I think it was the city. You could see District 9 from there. And thank you. And it's like a 200-floor Cabrini green like tower that is a city, and it's overrun by a drug lord played by Lena Headey, who we know from, she was the queen in 300, and she played Sarah Connor in the Sarah Connor Chronicles. I remember her as not Keira Knightley in the Brothers Grimm, and even as far back as Remains of the Day. So there's the female drug lord who is very, very brutal. But at the same time, Dredd also has to take in a new partner, a rookie partner who's also a psychic, played by Olivia Thirby, who was the sidekick in Juno and in Margaret's, and she was also in Snow Angels and United 93. It was shot in 3D. Obviously, I didn't see it in 3D, but it's very bloody, and there is a lot of gotcha splatter moments of body parts and gunfare. That being said, I actually wound up not hating the film, which is a ringing endorsement. Part of it because of Urban's performance. Part of it because the villain, she is understated. There's hardly any yelling in this. We expect Gary Oldman in The Professional yelling with a picture of this size. It's wall-to-wall bullets, but I think
it's also an art film.
It's not an art film, but but it seems like it wants to be a kick-ass Red, the first Expendables far as Machete is over-the-top, ridiculous action film, and everybody knows it. I don't think everybody knew it on this one. I think the right people knew it, like Carl and the villain. That helps smooth out the cliches of training the rookie and the obligatory shootouts and battles. So we actually have a new sound reaction here at Film Sociology, because we've been trying to find mediocre responses, and I think we finally found one.
It's not terrible.
No, it's not terrible. So there is that. However, also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, and I'm kind of bummed this didn't get nominations as far as camera work. But then I didn't go screaming on the interwebs about it. But it's Samsara, which, if you like the Kiana Kwatsi film series, you definitely want to check this out. 25 countries, 5 years, 5 continents, and it's no dialogue, but it captures everyday life from the mundane to the dangerous. I mean, they go in really close in.
Shot in 70 millimeter.
Yeah, and 70 millimeter as well. But I mean, volcanoes and just even gorgeous dance rituals in Asia. I mean, it is, you know, you don't need shrooms to enjoy it. Just you can go, and it is a visual marvel. I mean, it's really impressive to watch. So, yeah, the better the print, you can check this out. And the better, obviously, the better screen you have at home, that's always good. Don't watch this one on a laptop.
Yeah.
Yes, 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 yes!
And also on a DVD this week in Blu-ray, new title, Frankenweenie, which is also...
Wow, that'd be some good filming there, Mr. Soci.
Yes.
I liked Frankenweenie.
You liked Frankenweenie? Mm-hmm. Okay, let me ask you two questions. Had you seen the short version, the original 15-minute Frankenweenie short? You had not. Did you see Paranorman?
No.
Of course you're going to enjoy it. And that's fine. That is fine. It is a Tim Burton film that doesn't have Johnny Depp. There's one thing, because that coupling needs a rest. Yes. But it is a cool concept of a boy who wants to keep his dog alive, mm-hmm. and it's not voiced by Boris Karloff. But
Helena Bonham Carter, is she in it? I've not seen it yet.
No, I don't believe she provides a voice. Cobe, would you check IMDb, please? Martin Landau's in this, mm-hmm. and that's always a good thing.
Yeah.
That's always, it's not topping my favorite line about Boris Karloff and Ed Wood, which we can never repeat, unless it's my last day of work, but I don't want that. But no, it looks cool, but I think, I saw Paranorman already, and I already saw the original 15-minute short, which I believe is on the Nightmare Before Christmas DVD.
So,
they flesh it out. Yeah, I suppose. But it also felt like they were padding the... I know it was funny. Years ago, we griped about there only being 3 animated features up for the Academy Award, and this year we have 5, and now it kind of feels a little padded.
A little bit.
So, Cobe, do we have a...
No Helena Bonham Carter.
Okay. Well, she was too busy being Mrs. Lovett in Les Mis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So
would this be the kind of movie you could let a little kid watch?
I think so. I mean, there's
be
a little
down in tears.
No. Well. I'm not going to ask what's the most disturbing thing you've shown your kids.
Probably a little less disturbing than what you've shown yours. Maybe.
Man.
Oh.
Wow. It's true, but wow, you went there. All right, fine. No, I think so. I think it should be all right. I mean, there's a little demonic cat, but if that's the worst thing.
No, we're not a cat family. I think.
Oh, you're not a cat? Well, then you're going to root for the dog. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Okay, also out is Compliance, which a very hard-edged what would you do story.
Intense.
It's what I've also told. Don't take a date to it. So, Craig, you saw it?
I've not actually seen it.
You've heard about it?
Yes, yeah. quite a few reviews on it, and I hear it's pretty intense.
Okay, so we also have a House at the End of the Street, where I want to see the... I don't really want to see the dad, just the fact that Elizabeth Shue is the mom and Jennifer Lawrence is the daughter. Yeah. That's Chia. That also came out on DVD this week. Wonder why. Hey. Oh, right, okay. And the latest to get out of debt, Nicolas Cage stars in Stolen, and he teams up once again with Con Air director Simon West, and I don't think even this made it the theater.
I was going to say that's got to be directed DVD.
It's directed DVD. Yeah. Right next to Mr. Sense films with De Niro. So. Yes, I like the I owe
Mr. Sense.
Yeah, Mr. Scent, because I can't say I'm not allowed to say Fitty. So
you just did.
Yeah, see, and look how dumb-sounding that was. So Mr. Scent is fine. Okay, gentlemen, we have a lot of Blu-ray titles, so I will ask if you would you consider these films Blu-ray worthy? We're going to start with, of course, Criterion, because they are unstoppable. But they have finally put out on Blu-ray Two-Lane Blacktop.
I've never even seen it.
Really?
Yeah, you got me off guard.
The
on that.
Monty Hellman road picture with Warren Oates. And then James Taylor and Dennis Wilson.
James Taylor? The
yes,
James Taylor?
The boring as hell songwriter, James Taylor. Don't listen to James Taylor at Thanksgiving. Yeah. You'll never recover. So, yeah, the James Taylor, and it's a road film, but it's a little more cerebral than say Vanishing Point or The Seven Ups or any other the other great car movies of the 70s.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
Driving Miss Daisy, for those that really want to...
Criterion? Okay.
Not on Criterion. That's just... Oh, okay. No, the only Criterion
just
the blue, is that.
Okay.
Yeah, apparently, you know, Warner Brothers has been on a streak lately. They've just been putting out 40 to 50 titles a week on Blu-ray.
That's it.
So if you want to irritate, if you want to see irritate Spike Lee, tell him you like Django Unchained and you bought Driving Miss Daisy on Blu-ray. And of course, they also Warner Brothers also does their triple features, so you can have not the best looking picture, right. But you get three movies for the price of one. This week they put out The Goonies and Gremlins 1 and 2.
Wow.
I'm a huge fan of the Goonies.
Yeah,
really?
I own the Goonies on Blu-ray, and it's actually a really good transfer.
Yeah,
I can only imagine what the triple feature would look like. It's a hard movie to watch, kind of like even back in the day, like on film. So to watch it on Blu-ray is so-so, but to watch it kind of at a lower res on Blu-ray with
gives you a nostalgia feel.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Goonies held up well. Gremlins? I don't know.
Gremlins 2, especially.
Well, that's
the new batch.
Right.
I never got into either for some reason.
Yeah,
I don't know. But Craig, can you give us other examples of doing that for better effect?
What do you mean?
As far as putting a DVD onto a Blu-ray player,
like to upconvert?
Like you just said.
I mean, obviously there's only so much space on a Blu-ray, so you put more information on Blu-ray, it's gonna bring the quality down. You know, Goonies looked really good by itself on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could give you a good example of anything that's kind of been brought down. I don't think I own any of the triple feature discs. But, like, any disc that you have that has multiple commentaries or whatever, it's going to bring kind of the quality of the overall picture down, I guess, a little bit.
Okay. All right. So we have that. French Kiss, the not very good Lawrence Kasdan romantic comedy with Meg Ryan and Kevin Kline doing a ridiculous French accent.
Yeah, horrible.
Kevin Kline highlighted that picture. Mrs. Miniver, the original. Was it Betty Davis? 1942. Warner Brothers out there. Grand Hotel, the original Grand Hotel. The original 1962 Cape Fear.
Oh, yes.
Gregory Peck, Robert Mitchum, Jay Lee Thompson, and Albert Bernstein score. Very, very cool. And
that's on Blu-ray?
That is on Blu-ray.
Really?
I believe it's Universal, so you can see how subtle that film is by comparison to the Scorsese's version, and I love the Scorsese's version.
I do, too, but, I didn't see the classic until after I saw Scorsese's, and I actually prefer the classic.
Do you?
I do.
How so?
I don't know. Part of it's Gregory Peck, It's hard
Atticus Finch in peril.
Yeah, no, not at all.
And then to not have Juliet Lewis
sucking thumbs.
Right. Yeah, that was just weird.
Yeah. But I think what Scorsese had to do was really smart, of course, is to make the family dysfunctional. And the made the angel heart say, "Hey, calm down," when it came to religious overtones of redemption. So I understand that. But I think you get to be Gregory Peck, who prior to that didn't do a whole lot of thrillers. I mean he I know he had that 2-year stint of 3-year stint of The Omen and then Boys from Brazil, but thriller movies were not always there. I mean, he worked with Hitchcock, but I think Spellbound was a completely different ball of wax. But he hadn't really done a scary movie, and I think both Cape Fears are very, very scary. And if it weren't for Night of the Hunter, that would be Mitchum at his most demonic, I think. And by the way, Night of the Hunter is what I watched on Halloween.
That's actually coming up on IMA's Winter Film Series.
Yes, it is. I think tonight actually they're showing Sin City. So now
in 35, they're showing a 35 print.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, will they also have the audience reaction from Austin playing underneath? Because Robert Rodriguez likes to do that. It was on his DVD. So anyway, but the original Cape Fear, well worth checking out. Mm-hmm. And if you want to do a compare contrast, there you can't get any better than those. The Bone Collector, Denzel Washington Doesn't Move.
Was that Angelina Jolie?
And Angelina Jolie is a cop. Isn't that great? great. The original jazz singer, so it's Al Jolson in blackface, not Neil Diamond. Not greenface, as Sammy Terry once said. The Lost Films of Herschel Gordon Lewis. Now, of course, Herschel Gordon Lewis gave us the Gore Gore Girls, Wizard of Gore, 2000 Maniacs. Because the other one's Natalie Merchant, but this is—I think these are his more skin flicks. They are Linda and Abilene, Ecstasies of Women, and Black Love. And it's interesting because I just came across a Herschel Gordon Lewis film I had never seen, it happens. Shut up. and it'll be out. It should be. You can read about it a little bit in the blog next week. in staff picks, but it's She-Devils on Wheels.
Which is it the werewolf? Are they
werewolf? No. Okay. That werewolf's on wheels. Okay. Wow, you know that
sorry.
One.
Yeah.
Do you own it?
No, I don't own
it. Oh, that's right. Because I remember, well, it's funny you mentioned Werewolves on Wheels because that was a nominee in the Golden Turkey Awards for worst biker movie.
Yeah.
And it lost out to Satan's Sadist with Russ Tamblyn in the lead role. And I actually own that. But yeah, this one, we'll talk more about it next week. But One Fine Day, if you want George Clooney and Michelle mm-hmm. Pfeiffer on Blu-ray, there is that. The Brothers Grimm, which I talked about earlier. Scrooged, which is always fun to put out in January.
Yeah, after the holidays.
Is it going to be 50% off, I guess is what I'm wondering. Rush Hour 3. Mm. Now that they're it's that Chris Tucker almost got nominated wave of no, it's not. And then two more triple features from Warner Brothers. We have Happy Feet, The Ant Bully, and Scooby-Doo. That's a rough three. That's a rough three. Then there's a triple feature, Kobe. I'm afraid I wouldn't be surprised if it wound up at your house.
What's that?
Time Traveler's Wife, P.S. I Love You, and The Lake House.
Mm.
You don't know any of those, do you?
I think
we own
have
them
PS
all individually.
No, I think we have P.S. I Love You on DVD.
Do you really?
I think she does.
Yeah, she does.
Let's make that distinction.
Once again, Dr. Soci, film therapist, reminds Mr. Slagle that apparently co-patient Mr. Shabazz is endorsing and enforcing the 3-to-1 rule when it comes to husband-wife film picks. So there's that for you. All right, let's take a short break, and we'll start talking about the awards because it's the Film Geeks bracketology. You're listening to the Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Alone.
We got yes.
You got what?
Guess. Guests.
Guests.
Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
Hi, Craig. Hi, Steven.
Hello.
Welcome back to
That's
Film
a great intro.
Thank you. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. Craig Mintz and Stephen Cook are hanging out with us. Stephen, what have you seen recently? New, old, or different?
I recently saw Skyfall. Finally got to see the new Bond flick.
And where should we really be seeing it next?
I think it's playing maybe on one of like the most giganticest screen in the town,
Giganticus,
which is IMAX. You should be going to see it in IMAX. Saw it last weekend.
Now, did you go alone or did you take family with
you?
Well,
actually, I took my wife, and there's a good story there because I'm a huge theater geek as well.
No.
And yes.
And yes, so, I can tell you some of his performances if you see me on the street.
Oh, don't. They're not on YouTube, thank God.
We'll talk after the show.
Yeah, exactly.
But last weekend, it was date night, and we were going to go see a flick, and I actually suggested Les Mis, thinking this might score points with my wife. And she said,
"Oh, way to go, trade secrets."
What? And then she said, "No, I want to see the Bond movie." So I had to go because otherwise I would have
always loved you, Marnie.
I would have lost my man card had I put up a fight.
You know what? Real men don't have cards; they don't need them.
Well, I'm glad we saw Bond because it was awesome.
Yeah,
it's a really good kind of film for like couples.
It really is. I mean, and yeah, I took the smarter two-thirds. A few weeks ago, Emma, the kids' film correspondent, who's too cool to be here today, but she's sat through all of the Connerys except for Diamonds Are Forever.
Okay,
so I'm ready to move her into
Roger Moore.
Are you gonna
do it?
Yeah, but I need to get my copy of On Her Majesty's Secret Service back. Oh, hi, Kobe. How you doing?
Doing good.
Good. Yeah. Subtle.
Yeah, you can skip Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah.
I know, but I got to talk to her about this. I do want to start with, because the first Bond film I ever saw in theaters, remember, on Dort Highway,
oh, yeah.
The old Flint Cinema,
right.
Was The Spy Who Loved Me. And that's a hell of a first film to have.
Right. So,
Craig, what was your first in theaters?
Bond?
Yes.
Octopussy.
Yes.
Good choice.
We don't get to say that very often, so we enjoy that. See?
My first one was For Your Eyes Only, and I think I had the movie poster of that for many years.
I bet you did.
Yeah.
Great legs.
Yes.
Was you a show place?
Actually, I saw it on vacation with my grandparents.
Oh, okay. Because full disclosure, Stephen and I grew up together,
yep.
And so we know all the theaters. But there was the Dort Highway, the Flint Cinema, now Whore Haven. those who are from Flint know what I'm talking about. But that was the one single screen to see stuff. I saw Rocky there.
Uh-huh.
I saw Reds. I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark. I saw Star Wars.
The neighborhood cinema, like where everybody went to see
this,
it. Or...
Dort Highway is, I guess it's.
We didn't venture over there that often.
Well, you were better to go see a matinee in the daytime. I would say, for lack of a better comparison, I'd say Dort Highway is a little east or west Washington Street-ish. Yeah, I think you could buy bootleg DVDs on Dort Highway now. Mm-hmm. But we had Dort Highway, we had the Genesee Valley 4.
Uh-huh.
Which and Genesee Valley 4 was the one they would occasionally get the odd foreign or either foreign or independent film
right.
that somebody just came through with a canister and they just put it out there. You
empty
had the
theater. They're like, here, play this.
Yeah, kind of. There were. I remember. I saw Heartland. I saw the Conchita Farrell Rip Torn movie. Their local hero.
Did you say Rip Torn?
Not personally, no. And then we had the Grand Blanc Cinemas,
uh-huh.
And then the Dort Cinemas. It was two. I do remember seeing movies at downtown.
Oh, okay.
They were not doing movies. They were doing other bad things downtown at the cinemas there. And then we got the six screen multiplex.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in '79 the Burton's. It was Shoke Place 6.
Yep.
I like how a multiplex back and then was six screens.
Six.
Yeah. And now it's like 30.
To us, it was huge.
Yeah, it was huge because I remember. I remember my mother giving me a 20. It's like I'll drop me off at noon and go. I'll pick you up at 9.
Oh, nice.
You just have those days. So anyway, but yes, you and Marnie enjoyed Skyfall.
Skyfall was excellent. I mean, yeah, and she enjoyed it as well. I mean, great action. For a movie as long as it was, it totally kept her interest, as I'm
agreed.
Sure you talked about. And
most definitely.
The action set pieces, one to the next, it wasn't obvious. It was part of the character development of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
I like how it harkened back to the original Bond with the Craig. It actually took the reboot and went back to like the original Bond.
It's got a great balance of stuff we want to see, there's the great reveal of a character that I want to give away, and a part of Bond's past, but also just new stuff to move it along. It also helps that you have, I think it was John Logan, who was one of the co-writers of the screenplay,
right.
But the fact that Bond and M have to deal with their mortality.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so, I don't think we could have gotten away with a Bond film like that 10 years ago.
Exactly.
Or ever, prior to that. So now, Craig, how did you guys finagle, that's a word, getting Skyfall at IMAX?
You know, our theater's an original print IMAX theater, so we actually still show prints, like 1570 print IMAX. And those prints are actually very hard to come by. So it's played digitally in IMAX and both IMAX and digital cinemas. So we had an open slot. It was available. You know, I'm big on film, and I saw it, actually drove up to Chicago. My wife went with me. It was kind of a date weekend.
It was a road trip
to go see this film at a print-based IMAX theater because it's worth it. I mean, it truly is worth it if you're going to see it. So when I had the opportunity, I had the slot, I was like, I'll put it in. I've only got, you know, so many slots at our theater, so it's only really playing on the weekends for the next couple weekends. But it's like, this market needs to see or experience this film in IMAX. Just even for the sound alone, it's definitely worth the trip.
So, and it's how long are you running it?
This weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then the following weekend. So next weekend we're showing it as well.
Okay, and it's got a few nods, so definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely.
So, and what else is showing over at IMAX?
We have some traditional fare playing right now, a film called Space Junk 3D, which is about satellite debris. It's actually quite interesting. Tornado Alley 3D, which follows, if you're a fan of the, I think it's a Discovery series called Storm Chasers. Uh-huh. It's actually the film that they make in that TV series. And then a film about polar bears called To the Arctic.
Polar bears. Yeah. Okay. Now, explanation of inside joke. At Bloomington, in their library, or library if you're the Hansboroughs, they have two polar bears outside of their library, and when Emma was about two, she would refer to them as the polar bears.
And so. Speaking of IU.
Kobe, you're also the IU film correspondent here at Film Sociology.
Yes,
congratulations on your new job. No pay, but, you know. Title by name only.
Yes.
What's going on at IU Cinema? They're back in session?
IU Cinema is back in session just as classes are. This week, tonight, 7 o'clock, Taboo, drama, foreign language.
Okay.
Also, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Sunday, 7 again. But Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m., Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, man.
Big screen.
Yeah.
It's the only way to see it.
Yeah, and I'm going to a hockey game with my daughter. Cool.
But
that's
Lawrence
cool.
is there Monday night, too, 7 o'clock.
I'll have to see. I just bought the box set, the Lawrence of Arabia box set. I don't know when I'm going to get to it, but yeah, it's definitely there. Do we have
and then a weird transition after Lawrence of Arabia on the 14th. On the 15th, you have Spider-Man 2. Don't know how you get there.
Because Alfred Molina is the best thing about that film, as Doc Ock. Quite good.
And a medicinal chainsaw, which
rarely
see. In
that is true, Craig. That is, Cope, do we have Mike Perry's tribute? Let's do it since you mentioned it.
Wait, what?
This is.
This is from
the Hollywood Knights, one of the more underappreciated.
Robert Wool.
Slot. No, yes, this is the one that put Robert Wool on the map. Don't blame the movie for that. This was when. And also, young Fran Drescher is in this picture. But the big star at the time was Tony Danza.
Weird.
And there was also a young Michelle Pfeiffer in this picture as well. But this was, one of the, for me, it's probably my favorite of the Slav comedies of the late 70s, early 80s. Floyd Muttrux, who directed American Hot Wax, also directed this picture. And it's Halloween 1965, and Tubby's Drive-In is closing, and there's a gang from a car gang called the Hollywood Knights. Mm-hmm. And It's their last night at their hangout. And, of course, with these slob comedies come the bumbling police officers who have stunning conversations like this.
Lawrence of Arabia, he's an English guy. He came to fight the Turkish.
Okay, Clark, right there. That's what I'm talking about. Lawrence of Arabia doesn't have any lyrics to it. Doesn't have any words.
What do you mean doesn't have lyrics?
It's music.
To it?
It's music.
Hey, I've seen the movie four times.
And there were no words to it.
What are you
doing? There are no words to that. Did you hear what I was saying earlier?
Somewhere I know that somebody, I think, wrote lyrics to this song.
That was actually the first R-rated movie, I think.
The Hollywood Knights was?
I think so.
That thing was on cable? That thing was on cable, like early HBO.
Right.
That was on a lot.
Yeah. That was embarrassing. I remember sitting in my living room. I don't remember how old I was. Way too young to be watching it with my parents behind me.
Oh, they were watching too.
That was awkward.
How'd they like the they like the one arm violinist?
I don't know. I was probably not looking away from the screen at all.
Yeah, but look how you turned out.
That's right.
So you're fine. See, nothing wrong with that. Anyway, so yeah, Lawrence of Arabia Sunday at IU Cinema. So you have that. You have Sin City at the IMA. Of course, Skyfall is this weekend and next weekend at IMAX Downtown. Definitely worth checking out. Okay, calm down. Okay, so yesterday the Academy Award nominations came out. And as I said before, I'm glad I wasn't online. I saw the nominations and then I went about my day because I just didn't want to get my knickers too much into a twist because that's usually the first thing. It's nobody celebrates what did get recognized. It's more about who got robbed. So
always do the right thing, Matt Sosie.
Wow, that was good. That film also not nominated for Best Picture. That being said, I'm really happy for Beasts of the Southern Wild, which was my top film of last year. Life of Pi, which was my number two film of last year. Really happy that more people are going to... And, of course, the thing about the Academy Awards is it's good business.
Yeah.
You know, people can say that they don't do movies for the awards and you just do it for the work. Well, that's fine, but it's also good business. You know, Roger Ebert famously said, if you're nominated, you're guaranteed one picture. If you win, you're guaranteed three.
Yeah.
So it's good for folks' careers and it's good for money. That being said, really happy about, like I said, Beasts of the Southern Wild and Life of Pi. Really happy that Quizon Wallace is 9 years old, getting Best Actress nomination, as well as Emmanuel Riva, who is 85 for Amour. Mm-hmm. That being said, there are 9 films up for Best Picture. I think you can have 10. So I'm asking, why isn't Skyfall in the 10?
No doubt, yeah.
Before we break in, I was like, gentlemen, guess. And I always do this now every year because now that we have more than five nominees, so everybody gets a trophy and a juice cup. Craig, what would your five be?
Top five of what's nominated?
Of what's nominated, what would be the five? If we were if we were grown-ups in a real world that the studios wouldn't be griping.
You know, honestly, I've missed a couple of them. I still got to catch up.
That's all right.
I really, really like Silver Lining Playbook. Like, I really thought that was a solid flick.
Uh-huh.
That's the one with Bradley Cooper, right?
Academy Award nominated Bradley Cooper. So, yeah, he's on there. Yeah, no, Gina's squealing.
I'd say it was a tie between that and Django for me. I liked Django quite a bit. Beasts of the Southern Wild, excellent film. Lincoln, I've not seen. Life of Pi, really liked. I thought Ang Lee did a great job with that. I liked it in 3D. I don't know if you saw it in 3D, but I thought it actually played really well.
Yeah, that is actually worth checking out in 3D.
If you can, and if you get the opportunity, see it in 3D. It was made for 3D.
Okay, Steve?
I haven't seen all of them either.
That's all right.
In fact, this is the best month for me of the year because I can actually start catching up on films after they're nominated.
Right.
You know they're going to stick around a while. I've seen Lincoln. I've seen Argo. And I saw Skyfall, and I thought that was going to be nominated. But, I mean, even out of Lincoln and Argo, it's hard to say which is which. Apples and oranges. Apples and oranges. But I really liked Argo, and I was surprised, though, with some of the, you know, like you said, some of the folks who didn't get nominated for, like, Best Director.
Bigelow.
Tom Hooper for Les Mis. Then you see Catherine Bigelow for Zero Dark Thirty.
Well, and
you can almost discount those. So any of the folks who were not nominated for Best Director.
So whenever anybody does that, Catherine Bigelow and Ben Affleck apparently got the screw job.
Yeah.
But so the question is, who do you replace with them? Who do you take out? Do you take out Michael Haneke for Amour or?
It's tough.
Or
I mean,
Beasts of Southern Wild. I mean, it's a solid five for director.
Yeah.
For me, my five would be Zero Dark Thirty, Life of Pi, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, and Argo.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So,
Django.
I know. Well, it's just ridiculous. And, of course, this year's Meryl Streep winner when it comes to wrong category for screen time. Congratulations, Christoph Waltz. You're in 2 hours of a 2 hour and 40 minute film, but we're shoving you in supporting actor. I know why they did it. I know. They've done this before. He was amazing, but I know he's got a better shot at it in the supporting actor category. I understand.
Yeah, and then you compare, like, to Tommy Lee Jones and Lincoln, who really wasn't in there all that much.
But he's got fire and brimstone, and that's the Tommy Lee Jones we love, know and love. We love him berating people. Plus, he had to, you know, really hold back while doing Hope Springs, which is another underappreciated film that he did with Meryl Streep earlier this year. Let's not forget, Beatrice Straight did 5 minutes in Network and nailed it. So,
well, it's the shorter ones that, like, are usually the better kind of when they get nominated. Those are the ones that I like to think are going to
make
favored.
An impact.
Yeah, they make the punch.
So I guess I'm curious, as far as Best Picture, who are you guys pulling for right now?
Honestly, I've not seen it, but the buzz is around Lincoln. I think everybody kind of leans toward that one, so I need to take that one in. Although Zero Dark Thirty, I think, is nipping at its heels. Having gotten a release kind of later in the year, it's got to kind of catch up, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I always look at, who is nominated for Best Director. Because whoever was not nominated for Best Director, they don't stand a chance. So if you look at the past, in the past, like, five movies would get nominated for Best Picture, right?
Right.
And then usually four of those directors would get nominated for Director.
Yeah, there would be one off, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So that one never won. So I'm looking at the nine and thinking the other ones maybe... maybe not so much. So it might be Lincoln.
I don't know. They like to mix it up nowadays. I mean, they've got, what's his name hosting it this year?
Seth MacFarlane. I'm sorry. Also, Academy Award nominated Seth MacFarlane.
Was he up something for Ted?
Yeah, lyrics. He wrote a song that's up for Best Original Song.
Nice. Maybe this is my age or what I watch and listen to now, but I'm a huge Oscars fan. When they announced he was the host, I said, who?
Well, because Bob Hope's dead, and Billy Crystal's near dead, and
I just think
James Franco screwed it up last year, so
right. Yeah. And Hugh Jackman, well, he's busy, so that's all right. People talk about director and picture should be the same, and of course, I'm the D-bag that says screenplay and director should be the same. Yeah. That's also a solid thing. So I don't know. I'm still pushing for Beasts of the Southern Wild. It doesn't stand a chance, but it was my top film.
It's a nice underdog.
It really is, and it's really cool that it's gotten a lot of recognition. What are you smirking at, Kirby Slagle?
Craig called it an underdog film, and
did it remind you of Butler?
Yeah, it's
a scrappy young white team that won't get drafted.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. That's great. So it beats IU. It's not going to beat Lincoln.
Saving Private Ryan lost to Shakespeare in Love.
Thank God for that, too. By the way, I was, of course, debunked about one of my – you guys will appreciate this. Chris Lloyd, I'm giving you credit for this. He debunked one of my favorite movie rants, and it was about Saving Private Ryan. My original rant was, if you remember – it's, of course, movie revisionism – is there's that movie at the very beginning where the old guy is at Arlington National Cemetery, and then he drops down to his knee, and then the flashbacks begin.
Right.
I thought, for the life of me, I could have sworn that it's an extreme close-up of the old man's eyes, and it morphs into Tom Hanks's face.
You're right.
It does not happen. It does not. Because then my complaint was, at the end of the film, and besides, if you haven't seen it in 15 years, get over it. But and, of course, at the end of the film, we find out it's actually Matt Damon. It's actually Private Ryan, to which I, of course, screamed. I did not scream shenanigans. I screamed something else. How could this guy remember the first 2 hours of the film he's not in?
It's a valid point. It violates the POV.
Yeah, at the Indiana Film Journalists Association's intense meetings over our awards at Chris Lloyd's house, very intense. It's like the NHL lockout and a contract negotiation here at FYI, all rolled into one. He brought out his DVD of Saving Private Ryan and showed me I was wrong.
But how can he tell the story when he's not in the beginning?
So there's a shot, but there's a shot of the beach and the boat, and then there's another guy, and then the shaky Tom Hanks hand, and then it's Tom Hanks.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, fine. But, Cary Grant never said Judy, and, James Cagney never said you dirty rat. And that film, Tom Sizemore still did not give a mud hole stomping to Ed Burns, and that's why it didn't win Best Picture. And I want two guys from the same region. I want two Southern guys from the same platoon. I want two Jews from New York in the same region. Not one from each United Colors of Benetton. So, I'm sorry, what were we talking about? Lincoln.
But it's still, the movie has a chance. The smaller movies have a chance to campaign and
and more people will see it. So I'm happy about that, but I don't think it has a chance. we were talking earlier about animated because it's not a particularly strong year.
First year they've had like a full slate
in a while.
Yeah,
in a while. And you have Brave, Frankenweenie, Paranorman, The Pirates, Band of Misfits, which I still need to see. Mm-hmm. And for me, the front runner is Wreck-It Ralph because that was the biggest surprise of the year. Yeah. So we'll see about that. Okay, so we'll move over to actor. You have Bradley Cooper. Gina Wagner is squealing with delight over Silver Linings Playbook. Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln. Hugh Jackman in Les Mis. Joaquin Phoenix in The Master. And Denzel Washington in Flight. You wince at Flight.
I think this
the is hotel a... room scene is a big problem with me.
I've heard. It's one of the movies I've not seen, but this category seems awfully weighted. Like, it seems fairly certain who's going to win this one.
Day-Lewis?
Yeah.
And my buddy Jeff Marker is really pushing for Joaquin Phoenix in The Master. I think apparently I need to watch Silver Linings Playbook a second time. I liked it. I was not as bowled over with it, I think, compared to others. I would say take out Bradley Cooper and put in Christoph Waltz, and you got a fivesome right there. But I did enjoy it. I think my only quibble with Silver Linings is, like, Lincoln, and there were a few films like this where the ending, the fact that it had to depend on a dance. Now, I know it was a different twist on the romantic comedy climax, mm-hmm. and, you know, because we had folks with real problems compared to the problems of Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey, which I think those two are far more psychotic than Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence in this film. but the fact that it did come to that kind of took, as Ron Jaworski said, it took some of the wind out of the balloon for me on that one. So, but I will check that out.
De Niro is pitch perfect in it. Like,
and you know
what? Supporting, I thought he was amazing.
I've been saying for a while he needs one more home run. I want him to have a home run. I think in a lead.
Yeah.
But it was really happy to see him. And I think, I can't remember if it was Nick or Sam, one of the other IFJA guys. This was a piece of trivia I did not know because another surprise is Jackie Weaver, who I absolutely loved in Animal Kingdom, and I highly recommend that. That is one of the best mob films, and she is one of the scariest ladies in cinema in the last decade. But the fact that Silver Linings Playbook is the first film in over 30 years to have picture, director, actor, actress, supporting actor, supporting actress.
Wow.
Can anybody name the last film? Craig.
Reds.
Correct.
Wow.
Very good. Maureen Stapleton won, and Warren Beatty won for Best Director that year. As soon as he said that, I went, oh, yeah. But it was a great little piece I started thinking about and going through Wikipedia, not the news source here of film sociology. That's The Onion. And, of course, somebody's going to be a two-time winner in the supporting category.
Chris Tucker got robbed.
Shut up. No, he didn't.
I'm looking at my list. I'm like, what?
All right, guys, I guess. So when we're watching, is there a particular category or is there a particular nominee in any category that you're personally rooting for? Craig?
I always like screenplay, like mm-hmm. original screenplay. And I have to go with Quentin on this one. If Django's going to win anything, I think it's an original screenplay.
Boy, I'd like for that to happen.
Well, Moonrise Kingdom, though, was a solid flick. So.
I really enjoyed Moonrise.
Yeah.
And he is not – I wouldn't be surprised because he hasn't won yet either.
Yeah.
I guess looking – you know, the song category is always usually just a dog. And this is – like, I love the Adele song, Skyfall. I haven't heard some of the others, but at least from what I've read about the others, at least you've got a quality song this year.
Yeah,
that's probably going to win.
And it's gotten radio play. Uh-huh. It's kind of set up to win.
Yeah.
Now, and also usually traditionally, if you look in the past, that you can get and I'm bringing up something that that Craig brought up off air was bad films who get nominated. And I know you were taking umbrage with Snow White and the Huntsman. It's for costume, and it's for visual. Yeah, visual effects.
Yeah.
Those are I think pretty valid, despite the film being no fun at all.
Yeah, that might at least it had a redeeming quality, right?
The problem is, Mirror Mirror needed to be darker, and Snow White needed to lighten the bleep up big time.
I couldn't even finish Snow White.
And it wasn't just Kristen Stewart's horrible performance. There was a
we'll get to her in a little bit because that's coming next. So, I guess I'm going for the Susan Lucci of cinematographers. That's Roger Deakins. Skyfall is a great looking film, not just a Bond, a great looking Bond film. It's not a great Bond film. It's a great film, period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why
it transcends Bond.
It does. I think anybody anybody who's offended by Octopussy and Pussy Galore,
this redeems it.
Yeah, Agent Goodhead. Well, maybe, but yeah, you can check out Skyfall and enjoy the film in and of itself.
What I like about it, and not that I'm tooting my own horn at the IMAX,
it is a
standalone film. Like, you could not see any of the Bond films and walk into this and really enjoy this film.
Agreed.
In fact, you should not see Quantum of Solace.
Yes,
Quantum of Solace, as a sequel,
Quantum of Solace is okay, but as a standalone,
yeah, it's a decent stepping stone film. Yeah. Now that we've watched Casino Royale and gone to Skyfall. Like, okay, now we know why that was made.
Now, stick with Daniel Craig for the next 10 years, please.
I think he's signed on for two more.
Two more, so I can handle two more.
That'll be cool. And, of course, you can check out the Oscars February 24th at 7 o'clock. Well, actually, I think that means the ceremony won't start till 7:30. Yeah.
Red carpet.
Okay, you mentioned Kristen Stewart. So, yes, of course, in the time-honored tradition, the day before the Oscars come out, the Razzie Awards come out. And here's your five films up for Worst Picture. Starting off, my pick for Worst Film of 2012, that's Battleship. You have the Oogie Loves in Big Balloon Adventure, which now I have to see just out of curiosity because I've heard absolutely horrid things about it. And there was a great write-up about it in The Onion. Ooh, that's my boy, because that's the annual Adam Sandler film. 1,000 Words, that's the annual Eddie Murphy film. And the front runner, Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 2. We're already being called a hater at an apartment house somewhere in Fisher's.
You drink your Haterade.
I do drink my Haterade.
Being a hater.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Other front runners, Kristen Stewart, she's up for Snow White and the Huntsman and Twilight Saga. Although she's got hard company. Barbara Streisand in The Guilt Trip, Mila Jovovich in Resident Evil, Katherine Heigl in One for the Money, and Tyler Perry, because he plays a woman in drag. And it's,
it's
the Razzies. Worst actor, Nicolas Cage in everything he's done. No, this year it was Ghost Rider 2 and Seeking Justice.
Nobody saw it.
Hated it.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy in 1,000 Words. Robert Pattinson in Twilight, Tyler Perry in Good Deeds, and Alex Cross and Adam Sandler for
Was it a double nod for him?
Like, double nod. Wow. Yeah. Because he's in for Worst Actress, and he's in for Worst Actor because they hate Tyler Perry. That's fine. That's okay. Do I really want to go through the rest of these? No, not really. Okay. So
movies you don't want to see.
Do you guys ever have to suffer through any of these?
Well, like I said, with Snow White and the Huntsman, couldn't even finish it.
Yeah. I made the mistake. I was sick one day, and I stopped at Redbox. It was like the only thing they had, and
the only thing. There was like one movie in that monstrosity.
It was one choice, and it's like
I wanted to see it, but
it's like going to the vending machine, and all that's in there is corn nuts.
We're using that code. That's good. Yeah, I sat through a lot. No, have you heard of Oogie Loves and
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, no.
This is a film that. It was independently made, and it was supposed to be. It's an audience participation film for kids, little kids, and they're kind of. They look like Teletubbies and Boobas if they were in a Dolly painting, and they're supposed to find. I can't remember what they're supposed to find, but some of the actors who signed on to this: Christopher Lloyd, Cary Elwes. Chaz Palminteri, Cloris Leachman, and apparently the thing is it's supposed to have kids specifically run up and down the aisles and make noise and jump around. The one thing we absolutely detest children in theaters to do, and now there's a movie that's saying it's okay to do
it.
So, but apparently had one of the worst opening weekends in cinema history as far as recording box office results.
There is a reason for that.
But I think now out of sick curiosity, since I've not peppered my November and December with watching all of the bad films, there's that. All right, do we have words? We need words to live by?
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Okay, I guess we'll do Dead People We Like next week. So, Craig, Steve, thank you so much for hanging out.
Thank you.
Go see Skyfall at IMAX, and And take 10 people with you because it's worth it. Find somebody who hasn't seen a Bond movie and go check that out. So go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers.
Hi, Fort Myers.